Welcome. This is the podcast of Care Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager.
Welcome to Care Austria's Care in Action podcast. We are doing an English podcast today because, like always, again, we have a very special guest, and this guest is really special. I welcome the president and CEO of Care USA here in Vienna. Welcome, Michelle Nunn, to Vienna.
I'm so delighted to be here.
So, and like always, I introduce also Michelle Nunn briefly before we get started. Michelle Nunn leads more than 8,000 people working in more than 100 countries to save lives, defeat poverty, and achieve social justice. In her 9 years of service, CARE has taken its fundraising and impact to new levels, reaching more than 167 million people in 2023. Dear listeners, I think hearing that 167 million people were reached by the work of CARE is not telling us something in particular, right? That's a number. These are millions of people that are helped with the work of CARE. But right at the beginning of this conversation, I would like to flag that it's not about numbers only. It's also about numbers, but please all keep in mind it's about people like you and me, Michelle, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think sometimes we can get lost in the numbers because, they sound big and impressive, a million, 167 million. But if you think about them from the actual one life changed, one family changed, one community changed, and then you also zero in on that transformation. And what does that look like? Does that mean a girl who has the opportunity to finish her education? Does that mean a family that has the opportunity to have a home that is dignified and clean and hygienic and has shelter and doesn't have leaks? And does that mean the opportunity for someone just to literally get through a period of time in which they have had no food or no water? So each one of those is an increment of change. And when we zero in on that, I think we can feel the sense of transformation that CARE delivers in the world.
So it's all about people, and you already framed our current space of work, but maybe we allow ourselves to go a little bit back in history. There's a good reason that you visit us in Vienna. It's not a reason to celebrate, really, but CARE, the 80th anniversary is approaching. And in Vienna, it was where it all started somehow. In Austria, people were the main receivers of the famous CARE packages. They were also distributed in other European countries. But in Austria, and also especially here in Vienna, every seventh person received a CARE package. And we are 8 million inhabitants, so imagine how many. Amongst them were also my grandparents. And I knew about the CARE package and what it was for the people who received it long before I had the privilege to start working for CARE. And believe it or not, but many original CARE packages are still around in Vienna. And from my point of view, this was the reason why my generation grew up with a very positive attitude towards the United States. Many of us, also my parents, this was also for them something very special. And I did a series of podcasts with time testimonials. And when they tell these are not stories, this is their life. Yeah, you really travel back in time. So there's a special reason that you're here. And let's talk a little bit about the CARE package, because the CARE package today is still there in some emergency situations, but in a very different mode, right?
Absolutely. But I do think it bears hearkening back to that history. I was in San Francisco recently and was telling the story of the care package from the vantage point of innovation and scale. So imagine, you know, almost 80 years ago, a couple of Americans see the headlines of people facing starvation in Europe. They gather together with others. They put together a coalition of organizations. They invent the idea of this care package. Was literally, you know, not something that was defined as a care package. It was, that's in our nomenclature now. And then they figured out within a few months how to get 20,000 from Philadelphia to Le Havre, France. And then in the ensuing weeks and months, millions of care packages. And for $10, everybody, including Harry Truman, could buy a care package and they would get a receipt of where that care package mm-hmm. went. I mean, that is astounding. And then over time, 100 million plus care packages. So when we think about innovation, when we think about scale, it was also, as you know, we talked about part of the Marshall Plan. There's a whole way in which this is both an amazing example of grassroots innovation, but also institutional partnerships and leadership. And I think it's just a really inspiring way of thinking about the capacity for all of us to be involved in change. And 80 years later, the world faces into all sorts of challenges. And we don't deliver those same sort of, you know, cardboard care packages mm-hmm. with Hershey bars and
cornichons and jeans.
People remember very specifically what was in those care packages. But the same kind of like, the first of all, what it signified to people, which was solidarity, compassion, mm-hmm. interdependence, all of those things, I think, are still incredibly important. And the same spirit of our capacity, mm-hmm. both individually and collectively, to alleviate suffering and to actually advance human improvement is still at the heart of CARE's work.
Absolutely. And scaling up was an issue already in the birth hour of CARE. And in spite of the fact that today we don't send cardboards from the US to African countries or from Europe to the Middle East, which would not be a good thing to do, there are much more effective ways to do emergency aid nowadays. But the spirit of the CARE package is still interesting for us, and we should not get rid of it. We should rejuvenate it somehow, because today CARE is also one of the biggest partners, at least here in Austria. We are by far the biggest partner of the European Union. And we are also, if you look at the European landscape, CARE is one of the relevant and big partners of the European Union when it comes to development work as much as when it comes to humanitarian work with ECHO. And I know that CARE US is also one of the top tier partners of USAID. And this applies to the whole CARE world, if you want to call it like that. Every place where CARE is working, we partner with governments and with institutional donors. Of course, we are also heavily relying on each and every single donation that our listeners donate to CARE. This is also very important. But the construction of how CARE is helping was founded already 80 years ago. And we have the privilege, Michelle and I and many of our colleagues, to reinvent CARE and its work approaches and its also its ways of thinking and developing things together in a global arena, which is an enormous privilege, isn't it?
It's an extraordinary privilege. And if you think about the way that we've evolved over those 80 years, I mean, we've gone from a small group of Americans to a global network mm-hmm. that is incredibly locally based. And, you know, we have our teams that are from Afghanistan or Ghana or Haiti. They're all from the communities. They're leading the change from within their communities. But we are now networked together. And, you know, the perfect example of that is that, and when people think about what is the sustainability of aid, you know, here you have a story of CARE in the U.S. supporting Austrians mm-hmm. and now Austrians mm-hmm. supporting Ghana and Haiti and you know, Afghanistan and all of those places in the world. And so that there is a kind of passing it on that I think is very much a part of the care story. And also, I think this idea of continuing to innovate and continuing to be multi-sectoral. So we, you know, in the same way that care started with individuals, organizations, and also then governments, that's still the way that care operates. And we recognize that all the big problems in the world have to be tackled by not just one sector and not just one individual, but a sort of network of players. And I still think that is very much at the heart. If you think about CARE's humanitarian response now, I mean, one way of thinking about it is we now work, for instance, in the Philippines. We don't deploy teams to the Philippines. We have a sort of orchestra of organizations that are locally based, and within 48 hours, they can go from a few people to a couple of thousand people, and they can reach 95% of the Philippines through that locally based network. So that's the story of CARE, and it's the same kind of change-making and humanitarian spirit that animates us, but more and more agile, creative, and evolved ways of doing that work.
And that's, these are not only buzzwords, these are really words that you and I and all our colleagues, we bring them to life, which sometimes is quite a challenge, I would say. But on the other hand, we know it also from the political discussions that working in silos is simply not the recipe to face the future. This is simply out, yeah, because we see it in climate change. Climate change is one of the topics that have been relevant for CARE for many years, because we are talking more about resilience building, because we are not a climate change organization per se like others. But of course, many of the countries we are working in, like South Asia, for instance, or regions of the Sahel, the whole Sahel, you can say, are really negatively impacted by climate change and have been for many years. And CARE has been building resilience together with the people and in collaboration with many also scientific institutions to enable people to live in those areas impacted by climate change, right?
Well, I think in the spirit of CARE's holistic approach, climate change has to be addressed at so many different levels. And so if you think about it from one perspective, there's a book called Project Drawdown that says that if you combine, for instance, girls' education and the capacity for women to plan and space their families, if you combine those two things, it would be one of the top mitigating factors for all of climate change. So in addition to, though, helping to ensure that we are mitigating the impact of climate change, we're also helping people adapt. And that means helping them thrive where they are, which might mean, for instance, the capacity for them to plant seeds that are more resilient, to ensure that they have irrigation technologies that enable them to get through periods of drought. And it also means that we are that we're helping them when it's necessary to migrate in a safe way. So to either thrive where they are or to be able to, if required, to be able to move in a way that is dignified and, again, safe and supportive. And so I think all of those things combine to sort of this really important way in which we are helping those who we all know, by the way, have had the least to do with climate change but are suffering the most, which is those people that are living in poverty and those people that are living in places, largely a lot of them as smallholder farmers. And, you know, the world does need to stand with them. And we certainly, I think, CARE has an essential role to play in that work ahead.
And also in enabling bringing people together, right? CARE is building in many places and regions and countries. And that's also what we are doing here in Austria, by the way, building platforms where people can meet and not only discuss, but find approaches and possible solutions, and also where funding decisions are made. Because we need not pretend that it's all about collaboration, having good ideas and doing this and that. This is all costing enormous sums. We all know it. And CARE is one of the global players who is channeling funding from places where there's a surplus to places where it is needed. And we are doing this plus providing access to not only services, but also to trainings and knowledge, which I also see as key factors. And we are also, I like to talk about what I'm doing is somehow we broker funding and information. So
absolutely.
The picture of an NGO has changed dramatically.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that is, I mean, that idea of brokering and channeling and also ensuring, you know, we all know if you look at the statistics and the research, for instance, only a fraction, a couple percentage points of the total climate funding is going to women's mm-hmm. leadership. Mm-hmm. And yet, obviously, women are 50% of the population. Mm-hmm. They are often stewards of the environment in their communities. And so our capacity to support and lift up women and their leadership and their knowledge of what needs to be done in order to ensure that their own communities can endure and have resilience in the face of climate change. And I think there are women's ideas that we can support and do. And so when we bring them to those international forums, when we support women-based organizations that are leading the way and get them funding, then we have the capacity for transformational impact. And we're not just doing that with individuals, one here or one organization here. We're also, as you say, mm-hmm. bringing together a coalition mm-hmm. of organizations. And that's, again, I think how we ultimately reach the kind of scale that's going to be required by the magnitude of the challenge mm-hmm. of climate.
CARE has mentioned it several times, and the listeners to our podcast series, they are aware. I always frame it like that. CARE has a very strong focus on women and girls. But of course, we are not helping only women and girls. So maybe I get this question very often. If we overflag the importance of focusing on women and girls, but don't you help boys and men in emergency work? Of course. But what is the specialty of CARE is that they are a group that we are working with and for, because women and girls have different needs and are impacted differently by climate change, by drought, by flooding, than men are, and you can tell it as well, of course, but there's a simple example. Many women in South Asia are drowning because they are simply not able to swim, and their dresses, they would not take off their dresses just because their life is threatened due to their cultural barrier, and they are drawn down by their dresses, and lots of them are drowning. And so CARE is helping to provide training and access to training, life-saving training, always in the cultural setting that is appropriate for the communities we are working with, which is really key, isn't it? Because we, both of us, we know it, of course, and many of our listeners know it, that sometimes big NGOs are quite in the storm of criticism that we are deciding. And I have been working for CARE now for 15 years. You have been working for CARE for nearly 10 years. And I can say really with a very big trust that I have never decided what we do in any country office. Listeners who have other impressions of CARE Austria could call me, really. It is always in collaboration, and it's always in joining forces for something better. And that's also what we should do more in our own context, from my point of view.
Absolutely. I mean, we are, I think, obviously trying to help support the people who are most proximate to the challenges with the ideas and solutions that they think will work. And you and I are helping to bring resources and partnerships and collaboration in order to do that. And I think your specific example of how women are most impacted brings home in a very clear way. I think when we say we focus on women and girls, as you say, that is our sort of special way that I think is differentiated, that CARE approaches our work. And we know that women and girls are most impacted in disasters and in and by poverty. And we also know that they have disproportionate impact when they are given resources, voice, et cetera, mm-hmm. the capacity to change the trajectory for their whole families, mm-hmm. for men and boys, for communities. And absolutely, it's about helping and supporting the whole community, but also to really ensure that we are focused on those areas where we can make the biggest impact. And so, for instance, we know that that women and girls are often at the very heart of humanitarian response, and yet they get very little attention. CARE, we just put out, a report mm-hmm. on women in conflict. And most of the time, if you think about it, women are either ignored altogether in mm-hmm. the coverage of conflict or war, or they're seen only as victims. But they're also the ones that are sustaining their families. They're making sure their families are fed. They're moving them to safety when it's necessary. And so when we put them back into focus, when we put our lens back on them, then we recalibrate and we are better able to ensure that that we're supporting whole communities and whole families. Mm-hmm.
And talking about our focus on women and girls, I would say from where I come from, Austria is one of the richest countries in the world, but it is also a very traditional country. And believe it or not, we are not only the biggest organization when it comes to our international portfolio, apart from one faith-based organization, we are the only one female-led.
Wow.
In Austria.
Wow.
And Austria is a rich country, a wealthy country, but inequality is here a big issue. In average, women earn less than 20% less than men. Women have shorter careers. They are more represented than men at university. But when it comes to CEO positions, then, or professors at university, then it gets less and less. I'm not sure. Also in the US, I think there are some screams where we even see a backlash. It's very interesting that I don't have kids, but in my generation, the children, the daughters especially, tell their mothers, we have studies about that, at least here in Austria, that they don't want to have all the stress that we are having, that they are looking for a wealthy husband and honestly, and want to stay at home. So we see a retro wave, we call it, yeah, not all of them. But there is a backlash in feministic things that have been there for many years, and many people take them now for granted, also in our generation, believe it or not. And we have a very good cooperation with our government. We are one of the biggest partners. But even we in Austria have a women's minister who says, I'm not a feminist. Are you a feminist, Michelle?
I am a feminist, and I'm happy to declare it. And we are seeing this regression around what, you know, we're all hopeful that we could meet the sustainable development goals, which included gender equality within the next 10 years. But we're seeing, as you say, both, I would say, actual backward, sort of lack of progress. And we're also seeing that backlash that is actually, and you see it online digitally and from a social media perspective, mm-hmm. you see enormous vitriol and violence against women, mm-hmm. both physical and also mm-hmm. certainly from a cyber
perspective.
Also
in the US, right?
Also in the US.
And also in Austria.
I think everywhere around the world we're seeing mm-hmm. this. And to different, you know, obviously in different degrees and different manifestations, but I think that the importance of claiming our mantle of feminism, of the importance of saying that it is still essential that we give everyone, is half of the population mm-hmm. in the world, equal opportunity, should be something that is as basically understood as the essential to our progress, and also essential as a human right. And so I think we have our work cut out for us, but I think it makes the work of care all the more important at this critical time. And I think we do have to see it as it is such an opportunity, because it's so clear that we're not going to reach the other sustainable development goals unless we reach the gender equality goal, because you cannot, without unlocking the full potential of the global population, you cannot reach anywhere near the kind of economic progress, scientific progress, any of those pieces mm-hmm. that are essential to human flourishing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the approach is really twofold, not only in Asian, Africa, and Latin American context, but also in our own context. You have to know your rights first. It's a human right. But what really helps enormously is if you are able to generate your own income. And the more relevant the income is that you can generate, the more you are the decision maker of your own life. And this is also very true for Austria, to yes. be very honest and blunt.
Yes.
And this also closes a bit the circle of how the work of big NGOs changed for me. And I think also for many parts of care, it is all about what has this to do with us. Mm. Yeah, because 30 years ago when I started and we did fundraising and we did many things, it was very separated somehow. This was a project somewhere and this is us who are providing funding and knowledge and I don't know what. And nowadays, also because of digitalization, I would say, the barriers are lower if you allow them to be low. And we face many of the problems. And that's also the reason why the SDGs apply to all of us and not only the so-called global south. The SDGs are relevant for all of us and they apply to all our countries. And I don't know about the US, but in Europe, many countries are not dealing with the SDGs because they think, we are so high developed, but the gap between poor and rich or better offs is also widening all through Europe. Throughout Europe, you can see that.
Yeah, I think it's essential, as you say. One of the things that Care US has done for the first time, actually, in 2020, in the wake of COVID, we really started to do programming in the US. Mm-hmm. And there were a variety of reasons for it. One is that we have a very stubborn, intransigent level of poverty and deep poverty in the mm-hmm. US. And two is that we realized that there were things that we could learn from the rest of the world mm-hmm. in terms of development mm-hmm. and even humanitarian response. And so in the US, for instance, now CARE has a network, much like we have in the Philippines or mm-hmm. In Southern Africa, that we support of locally led, actually lots of them are women, BIPOC-led grassroots organizations, and we support them with dollars because they are the ones that are doing mm-hmm. the important work in the wake of a disaster, for instance, in our Gulf Coast states. We also are doing some of the work that we've done around the world around savings, mm-hmm. women's savings networks. And we're working around issues of maternal mortality, which is a growing problem, believe it or not, in the mm-hmm. United States, especially for Black women. So there's lots of lessons that the rest of the world has for instance, the U.S., and we are definitely, I think, in a time in the world where we are clear about our interdependence. Like, if a pandemic doesn't show us how connected we are and mm-hmm. interdependent we are, I'm not mm-hmm. sure what will. And also that we have the capacity to take solutions that are working all around the mm-hmm. world and to apply them in ways that hopefully can really advance our capacity to make a difference in the lives of those who are still marginalized in our communities, which exist everywhere.
So I really do hope that our appreciated listeners see throughout our conversation how much the approaches and the tools of an NGO like CARE, which is neither faith-based nor related to any political parties, how much our tools changed and how collaborative our approach is, because this is for sure the future. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid I can't close this interesting conversation because the aftermath of COVID also brought, there are many wars and conflicts around the world, and we see that they are if they come, they come to stay, unfortunately. And we have, in the aftermath of COVID, we saw the Ukraine, the assault of Russia on Ukraine. We saw it already in 2014. We have to be fair, all of us. And at that time, I've said it before in a podcast, and I say it again, at that time, we also didn't take the right decision because we were all somehow, this won't go further. We know it from many other examples that it never stays like it looks like at the beginning, but afterwards everybody is more clever than before. The second, and in Ukraine, we see a war really, this is very close to Vienna. It's 500-600, Lviv is 600 kilometers from Vienna. And I know many people from Ukraine who are switching between Ukraine and Austria, and they can't believe when they leave their war-torn country how peaceful you can live a few kilometers away. And we see also a certain fatigue in supporting and helping the people from Ukraine. And today, the election of the European Parliament. And I mention it because in March, this special decision of the European Union to host refugees from Ukraine without big administrative effort to do is ending. And nobody knows what will happen to all these hundreds of thousands of people living in Europe by March. So we call upon the responsible parties after the election to really take a quick decision to make it a bit easier for all of us who are also working and, of course, also living with refugees from Ukraine. The second thing that was not surprising as well, because it was surprising, the way how it escalated was surprising. It is a conflict, has been a conflict for our both lifetime. But the 7th of October was somehow a terrible game changer in the Middle East. And we both want to condemn the assault of Hamas on Israel and this enormous negative impact that it had on the Israeli society. On the other hand, CARE has been working with Palestine refugees for, I think, 70 years. Mm-hmm. And we are very big in the region. We work in Lebanon, we work in Jordan, we work in Turkey, you name it, everywhere. And we also worked in Gaza from day one, which really, really is one of the biggest challenges. And we also see something that is a bit uncommon. As we are working mainly and only with local staff, they are very often affected themselves by any catastrophe or the war in Gaza, for example, right?
Absolutely, yeah. If you think about because our teams are local, they're also, if there's an earthquake in Turkey mm-hmm. and Syria, we lost staff members mm-hmm. there. They were, those who survived were dealing, like literally living out of their cars while they were talking to us and mobilizing the support and resources. It's true in Lebanon. It's true in Gaza now. That is a fact that is a part of the humanitarian leadership set of challenges now, but it also means that those people who are most impacted and know what needs to be done are leading the way. And as you say, I think there's an enormity of challenges. You can't get by a day without reading headlines that can seem overwhelming around conflicts, around crisis of climate. And yet, I think we want people to remember that they do have agency, that individuals still do matter, that whether it was $10 of sending a care package mm-hmm. 80 years ago, whether it's the monthly contribution that I know so many make to CARE here in Austria or in the United States or in other places around the world, that all goes into alleviating suffering, saving lives, helping people to flourish. And there are meaningful solutions, and they can be, and they are being brought to bear. And so we can't, I think, be swallowed up in the sort of mm-hmm. I would say drown in despair. We need to remember that there are life rafts for mm-hmm. people, and also that there's the capacity to build a better future in communities. And we see this everywhere. I mean, you and I have the privilege of going to see their Absolutely. Work, and we get to see and hear the women, the families, the men who are part of the largest savings group model in the world, with close to 20 million people mm-hmm. that are a part of that are saving together and building their businesses and lives. We get to see how girls, when they have the chance to finish secondary education, what that means in terms of the entire trajectory of their lives and their children's lives. And so I think we want people to recognize that there is still a chance for everyone to care, to mm-hmm. connect, and to stand with and together and for a better future. And that means for all of us.
Absolutely. And if you want to do something in a very constructive way with a really private and independent organization, CARE is the right choice, be it in Europe, be it in Austria, be it in the US. We really need every single dollar, every single euro, believe it or not. I can share with you that our administrative cost last year in Austria was 5.5%, including marketing expenses. So this is really a quite low number. So everything that you donate goes to the people who need it most, be it in Ukraine, be it in Gaza, or elsewhere in the world. Michelle, I thank you for the conversation, and I'm looking forward to many, many joint things that we do together in the future.
We're incredibly grateful to you and for our partnership.
Thanks for listening. This was CARE in Action, the podcast of CARE Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager. For further information, go to care.at. Sponsored by CC Real.